From Directions Magazine, this is Directions on the News for Tuesday, April 1st, 2014. This weekly podcast gives you an inside edge on technology news related to all things location. This is Joe Francica, Editor-in-Chief in Huntsville, Alabama.
This is Adina Schutzberg, Executive Editor in Ottawa, Kansas.
With the explosion of indoor location technology, mobile fitness gizmos, and just the fact that our smartphones and tablets are always shouting out your location brings new technology and terminology to our lexicon. We'll focus on four terms that are not common parlance, but that we think you should know. But first, a word from our sponsor. Map out your future in one of the top three high-growth industries. With a master's degree in applied geospatial sciences from Elmhurst College, you'll be an expert in spatial thinking and geographic information systems. And you'll have the tools that will make you indispensable in the industry. The degree is completed entirely online in cohort-based classes, so it's perfect for working professionals. For more information, visit go.elmhurst.edu/spsmags. Well, Adina, we've got some new terminology to deal with these days, and while I hope that most of our listeners have heard these phrases before, there are some that here that we'll toss out that even I had not recognized until just very recently. But many, if not all, have some relationship to indoor positioning, and perhaps that's a common thread, though they're not perhaps the only thing in common. But let's start there. From iBeacons to Bluetooth, indoor positioning is absolutely red hot. And perhaps even hotter than indoor technology is the Internet of Things, wearable technology, think heart monitors and Google Glass and new toys like Fitbit and Nike Fuel Band. You thought you were connected before with just carrying a smartphone around. That's nothing compared to what's coming. Let me start off with Bluetooth Low Energy, or BLE, as it's sometimes referred to. Bluetooth, as we know, is short-range radio waves carrying over distances up to about 30 feet or so. BLE is a specific protocol of Bluetooth 4.0. BLE uses the same 2.4 gigahertz radio frequencies as Bluetooth, but it's differentiated from the Bluetooth that we know because of low power requirements, such that it could operate for months or years on a small cell. But it's also small size, low cost, and compatibility with some of the tablets and smartphones that are out there today. That's the first term. Now we're going to talk later about Fitbit and some of those other things, but are you as surprised at the rise of some of the things that are using Bluetooth Low Energy? It just seems like there's an explosion out there of new devices.
There is, but I think, like most people, I really don't care what technology is being used to move the data, just that it works. So, in fact, until we started doing this podcast, I did not know that Bluetooth Low Energy is the technology that Apple's using for its iBeacons.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right.
And as I said before, I don't care. And I think there's an awful lot of that, certainly in the consumer market, in the B2B and sort of the professional market, it matters more because some may be more reliable, may have more range, and those kinds of things. But for most people, I think it sort of doesn't matter. And even Bluetooth, I think if you ask somebody what Bluetooth is, they'll say, oh, it's the thing that connects my ear dongle thing to my cell phone so I can talk to the air.
Right. It is very embedded technology and way down in the guts. Companies like Qualcomm are using Bluetooth in some of their devices for medical and fitness. But as you say, it's very true. We don't often think about the guts of what's going on down below in some of these devices. How many people are familiar with Qualcomm? It's just the guts inside of many smartphones. They don't really know Qualcomm, and they don't know Bluetooth. So I would agree with you that, but I think it's important to know what, again, for our reader and listeners, what's going on down there. The next term I want to talk about is something called ambient geography, and there are a few actually terms related to ambient geography that I want to get out of the way. First, from Patrick Connolly. Now, he's the location technology practice leader at ABI Research, and he defines ambient intelligence as the ability of a system to appreciate its environment. The same is true of people, whereby the individual is aware of their surroundings and can interpret and respond to these individual needs. To Connolly, ambient intelligence is the opposite of big data. It's taking information about one particular user and giving it back to the user with certain services and information. So think of this rush of information coming back to the user. And again, we're going to pick up on that a little bit later in our discussion here. In his blog, Andrew Kurjata discusses ambient awareness as a concept used by social scientists to describe phenomena of bringing peripheral knowledge to the people around you. So I'll go to now ambient geography, which to me is using all of this information that's coming in from around us, including social media, Twitter, Foursquare, whatever, or even things like Google searches, and understanding more about, could be proximity or could be just about something you're searching on, but it's this broad awareness of the things around you. I just find that a fascinating term to throw out there.
I don't find it fascinating at all. In fact, I hadn't even heard the two words ambient and geography put together until you raised them. And I think what really bothers me about it is ambient means nearby or around you. So basically, when you use that term to precede geography, it's sort of very local geography, or if you like, very large-scale geography. What we're really trying to get at here is the technology of what's around you, using technology to better understand what's around you. And it doesn't have that quality to it. I don't like the term. I don't think it's going to be widely used.
Well, as I understand it, it's and this comes from our colleague, Wes Stroh, that ambient geography is actually a term used in academia, such that it refers more to demography, an expression of an understanding of demographic phenomenon related to what's going on around you. So I was not familiar with that.
But demography isn't local.
Well, it could be local.
It has that sort of different, that scale issue.
Well, I thought of it as some of the things that are associated with psychographics, which is, if I'm living in this zip code, around me are certain demographic characteristics. I may not be a part of that particular designation, but around me, that's the most prevalent demographic characteristics, age, income, ethnicity. That's how I comprehend it.
That one, I got to wait and see on that one. I don't understand it really, and I don't see how it's going to help us better understand how technology is going to work with us sort of locally.
Let's go back to the term just ambient intelligence. We have all of these things coming to us from our mobile devices, and I get the feeling that terminology is more geared towards, I can get at all this information and it's localized when I need it. If I'm looking for the pizza parlor, all I have to do is look up a search and it's 2 miles away. That to me is this ambient intelligence. It's and to a degree ambient geospatial information.
Oh, I think I figured it out in your giving that example. I think the problem is geography is implied.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
you just said
mm-hmm.
it. If I do a search, geography is implied.
Yeah,
and I think that's true. So I think maybe what we're really getting to is the word ambient is going to stay with us, but the geography part's going to disappear.
Could be. And that brings me to the next word, which is ubiquitous location. And I wanted to discuss ambient geography first, because ubiquitous location, to set the stage for this term. You can't understand what we just discussed in ambient geography without realizing that everything has a location component. Let me go back to something that Connolly said from ABI Research. He said, as such, location is key to making ambient intelligence work. Connolly says that we need to understand the person's personal preferences. Where have they been in the past, or what will be of most interest to them now, taking account of social connections. Ubiquitous location-based information, therefore, is fundamental to making an accurate recommendation. So as we engage more with our mobile devices, where there is now predictive information, and I believe that's what they're getting at, is you need ubiquitous location to understand predictive analytics and items that will be suggested to you, perhaps as you move inside a geofence, for example, I want this information automatically to come with me. So this idea of ubiquitous location, always on, always available, always know where you are, is I think what's being encompassed by this term.
Right, and this term I like, and this is sort of the advanced understanding of a term that I've used on this podcast before, which is sort of your personal orbit.
Yeah. Right,
which is sort of your regular places that you go daily, weekly. My suggestion has always been if companies or organizations could capture that information, they would know an awful lot about you, and they could use that to predict and then to provide for you the appropriate information in context as you travel through those orbits.
Right.
And the whole idea that this adds on to it is that as you travel through those orbits, you, and let's use the word check in, for lack of a better one, every time you do something, every time I go to my coffee shop and swipe my card for my coffee, they know I was there. So mm-hmm. I'm sort of checking in. Well, we don't use that term. If I go through the drive-thru and pick up a sandwich and I swipe something or I use my mobile phone to pay for it, they know I've been there. So that's right. Sort of the advanced version of these orbits and the collection of information from those orbits and then using that back again to me to hopefully make my life better and for people to sell me the things that I need.
And do you think that has a relationship to what we know about Nest, the company that Google acquired, these connected devices that understand your personal preferences, that will turn turn your thermostat off or on depending on almost like an artificial intelligence, that they know your habits.
Right. If you like, Nest is the single location, right? It manages your house.
Right.
So it has to keep track of your comings and goings and your orbit in and out of that house. But when you expand that to the broader world, all of your comings and goings to work and to school and to the gym and everything else you do, that's a whole lot more intelligence about you. I think it's sort of the advanced version of the Nest.
Right. And speaking about intelligence about you, let's go to the last phrase here called the quantified self. We have our Bluetooth low energy devices. We understand our geographic surroundings. At least our devices are telling us about our surroundings. And this is because of ubiquitous location. These devices are beginning to tell us more about ourselves than perhaps we wanted us to know. So let me ask you, how quantified are you?
I am surprisingly unquantified.
Do you use anything that may give you feedback? Could be a heart monitor, anything like that you've used recently?
No, but I do have something that I think we forget, and that's that the quantified self is a new thing because we have low-cost, easy-to-use technology to capture all this information. If you run it back 5 or 10 years ago, we could track all these things. But to do it, you had to go to a hospital, and they had to have this fancy technology, and you had to carry around a 2-pound satchel with you as they tracked your heart changes over the course of a 36-hour period. Now, I know all about this because I have been involved in a lot of medical studies that I do to help forward medicine. So, yeah, I've walked around with the old-fashioned motion sensors, which was this big honking thing you wore on your wrist. And I've been attached to electrodes that could monitor what was happening while I was sleeping, right? We've had all of these things. Now it's you can just go buy one at Target and use it and capture that information. And if you go back even further, this is, in a sense, just the evolution. So what came before the ones that I was just talking about are that piece of paper, right, where you write down everything you ate today and you write down how many miles you ran and how you felt, right?
Yeah.
Or you wrote down what television shows you watched, right?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so this is just the natural progression as the technology has changed. You can get much better data. It's much more accurate. The sensors are really good. And these things, ideally, they don't forget to write down that you slept for 8 hours, right? Because it's sensing it right from your body.
Yeah, right. Well, I think it has enormous potential to change the face of medicine, really. If you knew more about yourself, then your visits to the doctor become more analytical and less
anecdotal.
He doesn't have to go through the same type of physical about you because you'll have all that data ahead of time.
Well, and I think there's another key point here. I mean, you go to the doctor and she asks, so how you been sleeping? You say, okay. Mm-hmm. But you don't remember that you had, you know, 6 nights where you only got 4 hours of sleep. But your Fitbit does know that.
Right, right.
So the data is much, much better.
Right. You plug all that into her system. You know, she's allowed to see that. And the diagnosis becomes, I think, a lot more specific.
Now, here's the question that I have about these devices. Many of these are sort of improve my life devices, right? I want to lose weight. I want to be more active. I want to sleep better. All that good stuff that we all make in our New Year's resolutions. What I often see, for those who really want to make those changes, they get the device, they use it to learn about their habits and to change their habits, and then the device goes in the drawer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's somewhat individualistic. Again, we're both runners. I mean, I've tracked my mileage for almost 30 years. Every day, you know, that I would run, I would write something in my logbook. And now I don't have to, right? Because I just upload the data from my Garmin. So I think individually, we all have our own preferences. Does it change my behavior? Yes, it does. And I think these Fitbit devices or fuel bands would probably change. Right now, I wear a heart monitor when I do indoor rowing. And I need that feedback. I need it because I want to improve my performance. So, but that's me. Again, I go back to the individual.
Right, and I think it really is very different because I have a Garmin and I've had one since I started running seriously 8 or 9 years ago. And I only wear it I wear it strictly to measure the distance. I don't care how fast I go. And I don't even wear it that often because if I know I'm out for 2 hours, I know about how far I went, and that's good enough. The other thing, and again, I think we can't just think about these devices as data collection devices. We need to think about them as devices that help us learn about ourselves. So I would argue that part of the reason to wear a Garmin or any kind of device like that is to learn what it feels like to run at a particular effort or to row at a particular effort or to be at a particular heart rate. Because a lot of the goal can be to learn how to feel what that is. But one of my coaches made a big deal about, you know, as you progress as a runner, you should be able to run by feel successfully.
Mm, yeah.
And that was the goal. And these were just tools that you used to get there. And then once you get to that final point, you take those things off. So if you look at most of the elite runners, what are they wearing? They're wearing a watch, and that's it. And some of them don't even wear a watch.
Well, that's all the time we have for today.
With a master's degree in Applied Geospatial Sciences from Elmhurst College, you can map out your future. At Elmhurst, you work with experienced educators and professionals, and you can complete the program in just 2 years. And Elmhurst has a dedicated GIS server, so you can get hands-on experience. To learn more, visit go.elmhurst.edu/SPSMAGS.
And if you'd like to comment about today's podcast, you can write to us at editors@directionsmag.com. Leave a comment where this podcast is posted at Directions Mag, or send us a tweet at Directions Mag. Thanks again for joining us today, and be sure to tell a friend.